we get the program underway this afternoon by welcoming in from Defector Media, the lovely and talented David Roth. Hello, David.
Hey, how are you, Rich?
I'm doing very well, thanks. How's your Friday?
Pretty good. I mean, close enough to being over that it's getting better with every moment that passes.
I always like to start with a really important topic when you join us, and I saw this yesterday, and it made me think of you. But
this is always the setup to something extremely humbling. What is it, Rich?
I believe, a video, or at least a picture. If it was a video, I couldn't possibly have watched it. But it was Calista Gingrich saying that it was kind of a cold night and that it was perfect to cook up some chili with Newt Gingrich. And I thought, if there's a hell, there you go.
So, I don't know how to thank you for saying that you see a picture of Calista Gingrich's incredibly uncanny, poreless, computer-generated face, and you're like, I wonder what Dave Roth is doing right now. I hope he's well. This seems like something he'd like. The photo is incredible. Someone pointed out that it's the second such photo that she's posted. In the first one, she's standing, again, looking like just some sort of, like, if they made the fembots from Austin Powers, like, if they were also very politically conservative, that's, like, what she looks like. And she's standing over a pot of chili, and in the first one, she's cooking it. And you can see that the stove is on, and she's stirring it, kind of. In this one, it is very clear that the stove is, in fact, not on, and she's just standing over this pot of what looks like some sort of medical waste. It is as disturbing a photo as I've ever seen of Calista Gingrich. And, like, it's my fault that I could list several that are competitors, but they're all really unsettling.
See, but I knew you would appreciate it.
Yeah, well, I've never been more disappointed than to help you be correct in that.
All right, well, we've got other places to go in our conversation this afternoon. Let's talk about the Mets. Listen, a great move, not getting Trevor Bauer. That tells me they're certainly headed in the right direction.
It made me happy. It's definitely one of those things where I had sort of resigned myself. It was my fault for doing it off of a Bob Nightingale report, the frequently wrong USA, and kind of delightfully frequently wrong, like USA Today baseball reporter had announced that the deal was done. And it seems like the deal was very close to being done, and that they then sort of, just in the way that Bauer and his agent have done all offseason, kind of seemed to go for maximum virality on a story without any real idea of why they would be better off to do that. So I appreciated, in this case, as corny as their whole gambit is, and like the sort of weird like YouTuber mentality of constantly producing content and pumping it, but I appreciated in this case because I liked the ending, which was him not winding up on the Mets. He's a perfectly good pitcher. I just don't want to have to cheer for somebody that I know has directed harassment at people that I'm friends with online just out of the goodness of its heart. It's nice to not have to talk myself into that.
And that sort of steers us to a wonderful recent piece that you did that covered a lot of ground, but it began with the story of Hall of Famer Steve Carlton. And I guess, would we say that he is the model for being responsibly crazy?
It's weird. I worried that I was being unfair to him. And the story is basically about the kind of the drift in conservative politics in general into kookery, to use a technical term. But I mean, like, just in terms of being the sort of weird person that believes every conspiracy theory, even and especially where they contradict each other. Carlton appears to be that sort of guy, like going off the sort of the big Pat Jordan story about him in 1994. Is this the guy that believes that, you know, some secretive group of people is controlling the world and the course of human history? But he's, like, not really very discerning about who that secret group of people is. So sometimes it's Jews, and sometimes it's the Council on Foreign Relations, and sometimes it's MI5, and sometimes it's, you know, whatever. Like, the point is just to believe stuff that other people don't believe. And yet, you know, he doesn't seem happy or anything like that, but he's like, you know, he's living out in the high desert in Colorado and stockpiling guns and planting date trees and selling autographs. And honestly, like, I'd take that over serving in the House of Representatives. Like, he's not hurting anybody.
Right. And he seems to me to be that type of, I don't know, Fox OAN Newsmax watcher, Breitbart reader that will literally latch on to whatever is the most recent crazy story he's heard.
Yeah, whatever sort of makes you the most upset. That's the part of it that I have the hardest time kind of understanding. I think that this has always been my way of thinking about conspiracy stuff, because I think that, like, the impulse, especially given that, you know, we do get lied to a lot and very obviously in our politics, that, like, and both parties do it, and it is an insulting experience to be able to, you know, see a reality in front of your eyes and then have somebody tell you, no, that's not right. It's deranging. It makes you feel crazy. And yet, I think that there is this other response to it, like the idea of, like, so then if you know that, like, what you're being told is not actually the case, there's a bunch of different ways that you can try to figure out what's actually happening. And to me, like, the conspiratorial impulse, or the idea to kind of, like, pull it all into order so that everything is happening exactly according to plan, is, to me, like, really babyish, for starters, that it's just, like, that's not the way the world works, and that's, again, another sort of thing that you experience right away. Like, nothing ever happens the way it's supposed to happen. So the idea that somehow, like, George Soros has the ability to make that work, to me, is, like, on its face, is kind of silly. And yet, like, there's something about the way that it makes people feel, I think, to, like, see, you know, the idea of, like, an unseen hand directing all of these things, that, like, and then you're just speculating on whose hand that is, and that's a lot easier than sort of sitting in the, you know, the very uncomfortable feeling of not being in control of your own life.
One of the many great points you made, though, David, in that piece was that with that group of folks, it's never about helping anybody. It's always about enemies and problems.
Yeah, it comes from, I mean, that to me is, like, the part of it where it gets inexcusable. Because to me, like, looking for answers when you're aware that the ones you're being given are false and insufficient, like, that's good. You should do that. You know, you should be responsible and be smart about how you do it, but it doesn't mean that you have to just accept that you'll never know. But the rest of it, it's like, I mean, it's about what you want to do with the knowledge that you're getting. And I think that with Carlton, it was hard to tell what he wanted beyond, like, sort of affirmation for withdrawing from society. But when you see, the comparison that I tried to make, Bob Ryan did it first in a Twitter post that people got really mad at, was basically between Carlton and Kurt Schilling, who kind of, like, compulsively posts about all of the enemies and the lies and the whatever that he, you know, believes that he's encountering. And yet, like, none of it really seems to go anywhere. Like, it just seems, and I don't even know that his heart is in it. I think that that's just, like, Schilling moving with the tide as a conservative person. That 20 years ago, as a conservative person, he sounded like George W. Bush, and now he sounds like Alex Jones. And I don't think that there was, like, a conscious choice there on his part. I think he's just, like, this is what he's eating,
yeah,
and
right.
So what he excretes changes in turn.
Well put. David
Sorry,
Roth.
I knew when I was getting in there, I was like, oh,
nope.
I know how this is going to end.
Nope, I thought it was perfect. David Roth with us here on Downtown. I had a friend on social media post something today and say, wow, can you believe this? Remember when Andrew Cuomo was a national hero? And I thought, you haven't talked to too many people from New York.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, it's good that this is coming out. I think it was clear that the story that he's in trouble for now is basically admitting that he was intentionally undercounting the significant number of deaths in nursing homes during the first peak of COVID in New York State, because he didn't want to give Trump a political football and they would just use it irresponsibly. And it's amazing that he, or whatever, his spokesperson felt comfortable just making that argument. I mean, I think that that's the level of pushback that you get if you tweet negatively about Andrew Cuomo. There is, like, sort of a fan community around him, which is so perverse that I can't even begin to go into it. Like, at least Rihanna's cool, you know? Like, I don't understand where the Cuomo fan people come from. But it, I don't know. I mean, there's something about him that's so clearly been, like, a funhouse version of Trump. Not the opposite, but, like, a slightly different, slightly more motivated version of maniacal Queens masculinity that I mean, I guess he came off well on TV, you know, during the first peak, and there was an easy contrast to make there. It's just, I think that however good or bad he was or wasn't on television, as somebody who lives here, like, it's, that is not anything relevant in the story of what he's done this last year.
I have not tuned into too much of the Trump defense during the impeachment trial, which I guess wrapped up in about 15 minutes. But what I gathered, it would essentially be the equivalent of Jeffrey Dahmer's defense team claiming he had an eating disorder.
It's devastating. Yes. I have not watched it blow by blow. I just can't. Like, not because it's too traumatic or whatever. It's just like, you know, at some point I'm just going to not be able to pay attention to that, because it's too many guys in suits talking. I mean, I've seen the videos that got shared, and I've seen the little highlights of Trump's defense team, which seems incredible. It's like 31 flavors of Lionel Hutz, just sort of playing out in slightly different ways. The guy, this was today, Bruce Castor, the Philadelphia guy that loves to mix up Brad Raffensperger's name with Ben Roethlisberger's. He got both names wrong.
Wow.
And if that's the level of attorney that you have, and he's going to win, that's going to be winning guy.
Yeah.
I can just spare myself that experience, I think.
So I wonder this, because, again, I know it doesn't bring you any joy, but you seem to know the inner workings of Trump so well. What do you imagine is a day in the life of exiled former President Donald J. Trump?
This is one of the moments where it's been harder to sort of imagine. Not like I have any great insight into the guy, but like, he posted all the damn time. So if you read his tweets, like, he's not doing anything strategically. Like, he has like a thought about Rosie O'Donnell and then he tweets it, and now he can't tweet it. So I don't know what he's doing with all of those thoughts about Rosie O'Donnell now. I imagine just calling people on the phone. He used to love to do that. Just call some real estate developer late at night and be like, "Did I ever tell you about the time Bette Midler was rude to me?" And they're like, "Yes, you did." And then he just does it again. But I think in this case, it's difficult. Like, all the stories that I've read about him, like, basically ghostwriting tweets for people and then just, like, having an assistant fax them to Dan Bongino or whatever is so pathetic that I really sort of hope that it's true. The idea that he's just coming up with insulting nicknames for people that he's watching on TV and then he just has nowhere to put them. I think that, you know, there are punishments that I would rather see him receive, but in lieu of, you know, anything, I'll definitely take him having to do all of his tweets live to an audience of personal assistants.
Yeah, I just picture a parade of temps coming in. You know, they can only last a week at a time, and they have to sit there and listen to whatever he would have tweeted out.
Yeah.
And it just burns them out.
That's terrific. That's definitely true. Gerald Nadler's glasses are unflattering.
It's like being Murphy Brown's secretary.
Right. Or like just a version of Hank Kingsley from the Larry Sanders Show that's somehow even more degrading.
Thank you, by the way, for sharing on social media, because I otherwise would have missed the powerful and inspiring OAN tribute to President Donald Trump.
So for those who have not seen it, which hopefully is everybody that is listening to this, OAN, it's really hard for the other cable networks, the ones that aren't Fox, because, like, they don't really know how to be TV networks, and so they just think that the purpose of a cable news network is to just talk about Donald Trump all day long. So they pulled a video that some, it's like a Twitter weirdo, like someone who's, like, in the InfoWars orbit, did, like, a fan video for Donald Trump in which it is just footage of him walking across a tarmac and, like, waving to helicopters and, you know, whatever, just doing wearing different hats, just Trump things. And the voiceover is someone reading Rudyard Kipling's If very quickly. And that whole poem is just, like, it's all of the sort of the old, like, masculine cliches of that era. So it's like, keep your head while all around you are losing yours. If you lose, but never make a point of complaining about your losses. And it's just like, it's like if you wrote a poem that was about the opposite of everything that Donald Trump does. And OAN just put it on the air during their news hour too. They were like, we thought you'd like this. Like, so here's 2 minutes of your president like just still footage of him standing near trucks.
And a lot of it I thought was done in slow-mo, but it's just the way he walks.
Yes. So the funniest thing about the video is definitely true. The funniest thing about it, someone sent me proof of this. It's not even an original idea. The first version of it was done for Arsene Wenger after he lost a coaching job in 2013. But it's terrific that, like, you can just sort of do it for any guy in a suit where there's a lot of photos and video of him looking upset. You can make a video of this.
Well, before we let you go, I want to go back to the sports world because you can never go wrong there finding awful hypocrisy. I have not liked Urban Meyer, I think, forever. And now,
not a very likable guy.
I feel pretty justified once again that he's announced his staff at Jacksonville, and it includes disgraced, fired former Iowa strength and conditioning coach Chris Doyle, who couldn't decide that whether he wanted to be more physically detrimental to his players' health or be a racist. Maybe some wonderful combination of both.
But he's got to, you know what, but you have to find, you know, he deserves a second chance. So, yes, he was racially abusive on a massive scale to the point where people were quitting the team. But does that mean he's bad? I don't understand the compulsion. And I guess it's like in some ways there's like a perverse way of spinning it where you're like, oh, this is actually very Christian of him, or it's very, like broad-minded that he's trying to help these people. I just think that like at some point you have to not do that. Like, and the idea, I understand that like, you know, he's trying to build a culture in Jacksonville and all that stuff. And some of that is BS and some of it is not. But if you accept that it's true and that he's looking to sort of like put his imprint on the team, like, wouldn't this be an easy choice not to make? Like, it's not like you can't find strength and conditioning coaches that aren't racist. Like, they're everywhere. Like, you go to a gym, there's like four or five guys, they all look like thumbs, and they like work out all the time. Just find one of those dudes.
Oh, this is Urban Meyer, who walked away from Florida to spend more time with his family.
Yeah, well, I think that maybe he realized that he'd fixed everything that could be fixed about Aaron Hernandez. He could move on with his life at that point.
There you go. Great judge of character, clearly.
Yeah. What a sport.
That's great. David Roth, Defector Media, joining us. David, always a pleasure for us to catch up with you. Thanks so much for carving out a little time for us this afternoon. Hope your weekend goes well.
Thanks, man. It's a pleasure for me as well. I'll talk to you later.
You got it.